Right, hello and welcome to the 24th Manx Footy Pod of the season. Today, myself and Disco.
Hello, everyone.
You're right there.
Just about, yeah.
I'm joined by former Isle of Man newspaper sports desk T-Boy and current BBC Northern Ireland anchorman Rick Farragher. We also caught up with Tony Meppen after his success at this week's Sports Awards. And, as always, we'll look ahead to Saturday's big games. Without further ado, let's get on with it. Welcome, Rick, to Podcast Towers. Thanks for coming in.
Very much. The prodigal son returns.
This is it.
This is where the magic happens then, lads.
It does.
No expense spared. I love the 1998, Windows 98 computer.
That's it.
Lovely Dell monitor.
Dorsey was asking about that water last week. We don't know how long that's been there.
That's so. Probably been here since 98 as well.
We'll give that a miss.
I was going to say, it's probably not as well turned out as the studios you're used to, is it?
Well, it's. Do you know what? The studios we work in are pretty nice. Some of them are quite plush, but I think this is fit for purpose. Is the description I'd give it. Nothing wrong with it.
Right, for those of you who don't know, for a heady 18 months between 2008 and 2009, Rick was Disco's predecessor, wasn't he?
The best years of his life.
Yeah. On the bastion of hope, that is the newspaper sports desk. We were just chatting then, it seemed a lot longer than 18 months.
For me, it went over in a heartbeat. For the people I work with, that probably dragged significantly for 18 months, but it was a fantastic time. You know, I joined Isle of Man newspapers, having never done a day in journalism. Never done a day in journalism in my life. I'd never written a thing. I kind of got the job almost by accident, really. It wasn't something I pursued when I left uni. It turned out to be a good career choice, I think. But certainly when I joined, I was very wet behind the ears. It was a make or break few weeks that I somehow managed to get through. But by the time I left Isle of Man newspapers, it had been, I think, the best decision of my life was to come and work here. And it stood me in good stead over the past 10 years or so.
So what do you remember about the halcyon days? I always volunteered you to do the feature stuff.
I think it was a baptism of fire. I remember my official start date was the 4th of February 2008. And a couple of days before that, I was sent to cover my first match, which was, we were just talking about this off air, weren't we? It was Onchan against Michael United in the preliminary round of the FA Cup.
Big match.
Yeah, early February, rain was falling.
At the Niverson, I presume?
Right? Yeah, attendance was one. Right. Excluding me, it was zero. And it was a freezing cold day, but it was a brilliant match. I think it finished 4-4 at the end of 90 minutes. Unbelievably, no one scored an extra time. And then Michael went through on penalties.
Wow.
It was just a really, really good game. And I sat there covering it thinking, do you know what? This could be all right. Every match I'm going to cover is going to be really close. It's going to be end-to-end stuff, crafty football, playing it along the deck. Didn't quite turn out that way, but it was that's where it all began. And then obviously from there, you start I suppose moving to the ranks, and you're covering some of your Premier League games, and you're watching, you know, Geordies were probably at the height of their powers then, really. You know, the guys who were still leading the way now would have been in their mid-20s, and it was brilliant to watch. And then covered the national games as well, which was probably my favourite part of my time here. I was always watching the Isle of Man and their great sort of interleague cup runs that they had. And then the features as well, you know, which was good and great, a roller coaster ride. Some were brilliant, some were not so brilliant.
Not so brilliant, no.
But no, it was a great time.
Any games stand out? You talk about the Isle of Man interleague cup runs.
I think this probably happened after I left Isle of Man newspapers. I can't remember because I went to work in local radio for a little bit. And I remember that fantastic game. It was unbelievable, really. Was the 5-3, which I think everyone kind of talks about.
Yeah, no, folklore.
You know, it was so, you know, you're at the bowl, the Isle of Man are playing,
I think it was Liverpool, wasn't it?
Liverpool.
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, we're playing the Liverpool
County League. Yeah.
3-0 down at half time. It was one of the coldest days I can ever remember. The weather was wild. There was hailstones, driving rain. We had the wind, it was thunder and lightning. The wind was in our faces for the first half, and we found ourselves 3-0 down. And me and the other people there, I think, were kind of thinking this could be a really, really bad day. And then the second half was just like nothing I've ever seen in amateur football. In the middle of a blizzard and these gale force winds, we came back. I think, was it Chris Bass scored the fourth goal?
I can't remember.
Yeah, it was. And the scenes were incredible. You know, some of the best scenes I've seen at a football game. It was absolutely incredible.
Yeah, that was pretty much bang on the 90th minute when he scored that.
Yeah, and I think we got our fifth. Was it sort of pretty much last kick of the game?
Yeah.
And it was just something that I think, as somebody who was there, you kind of feel bad for the fans of Manx Football who couldn't make it there that day, because I don't think you'll ever see anything like that again, really.
Well, I think we shifted a few extra examines that week, because we went with the headline, unbelievable, wasn't it? I think it was just incredible. So, you know, and Bob, there must have been a few humorous moments along the line. You seem to court
the occasional funny
moment.
Yeah, I mean, there was a feature I did. Some of them I'm very proud of, some of them perhaps I'm not so proud of. Wag of the Week wasn't really one of my finest moments. That was not great.
I'll just interject quickly. For those who don't know, Wag of the Week was, I'm going to say this, a heinously short-lived feature on Our Man Today, wasn't it? I think we, how many entries did we get at the time?
Did we get a couple?
I can't remember.
And I think you've got to know when your time's up on features. So we cut that short.
Yeah.
I feel sorry for whoever was runner up that week if there's only two.
Yeah, I think we have joint winners at the end of that. I also did a feature where I trained to be a football ref.
Yeah, obviously. And you used that picture with the tweet yesterday.
Lovely picture of me there, looking freezing cold, rosy red cheeks.
Peel Royal.
Dodgy haircut. Peel Royal, I think it was. And that was, I mean, as an experience, it was good, you know, and I'm glad I did it, but refereeing football matches, I don't think is my thing at all. I think I took charge of three in the end, all in the women's league. And I mean, the first match, I just had a shocker. I don't think I blew my whistle till the 70th minute. It was free flowing football. I can't remember what the score was, but the goals were flying in, and that was. It wasn't great, to be fair. You know, we'll probably speak about this more in depth later, but refereeing isn't something that I've considered doing again since then. That was quite bad.
Can I turn this around slightly and ask you, Andy?
Go on.
What were your highlights of working with Rick?
There were many and varied. You know, as he says, I'm speaking like an elder statesman of the press here, but I think when Rick came in, obviously, I'd gone from being the junior on the desk to being suddenly having some responsibility with Rick. So that basically meant making him clean the desk, you know.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for you to come back.
No, it's funny. Do you know how I say during my time here, I felt I kind of grew and kind of like ironed out any mistakes I may have made. Perhaps the biggest calamity that happened during my time was on my very last day. So if people listening don't know, my main sport, it's not football, it was always golf. Mm-hmm. And golf was my big passion growing up, and I subsequently covered golf a lot for the newspapers. And hasn't been the same since. And the weekend, or the couple of the week I left, was the qualifying stages of the Isle of Man Golf Championship, where sort of the, I think 81 guys all playing at the top 16 go through.
Yeah.
And there was, I think Andy probably knows this is going straight away.
Oh yeah.
And it's like, I think it's my last day, and we're against deadline, and it's
Monday examine,
bit of a pressure cooker, you know. Mm. And Andy's going, have you got those headlines in? Have you done that? Have you typed them up? Yeah, everything's fine. Yeah, everything's great. That's great. And we send everything through to print, and the papers are printed, and we sit back and have a cup of tea. And probably half an hour or so later, the sports editor drops a paper on my desk, and he says, "Look at the headline you've just put on the back page." And I said, I looked at the main headline, and it said, day of drama at Mount Murray or something like that. And then I looked at the picture underneath it, which had a group of qualifiers, I think, group of men all together, giving it the big thumbs up. And I'd done a bit of a typo, and I said, "Fireworks promised in cockout stages, not knockout stages." And The mistake was unrecoverable, and out of print it went, and I do need to get a copy of that back page framed, for the bathroom.
We have PDFs of this. It usually gets rocked out at your birthday, and we send you a copy of that. I have to say, obviously, it's a TT launch day today. Watty's out of the office covering that. He did say, make sure you ask Rick if he's had any more problems with his cock-out stages.
No, they've been limited.
They've been limited, or you've just covered them differently, probably.
Yes, yeah.
That was a standout moment. Another standout moment when Rick was on the desk, I remember we used to hide his phone in his desk.
Oh, dear.
And then make internal calls, and you can never find them. Another one. Again, this portrays that we didn't actually do much work with. But I used to blue tack your phone headset.
Classic. That was lovely as well. It's great. As you can see, it was really just like work non-stop, application and dedication to the craft.
It's a wonder how this podcast came, but it's been pretty organic, really.
It's a wonder how we managed to get newspapers out some weeks, to be honest.
With the amount of typos, there is a colour relation there, isn't there? Correlation. Yeah.
We can't forget that you dared him to enter a Maxi Muscle competition at one point.
Oh, this is right. Yeah, I trained. So I was also sort of big into the gym. I still am into health and fitness, and I really enjoy going to the gym. And I decided to enter, how do you describe it really? Kind of like a shirt off cover model.
Chunk to hunk or something like that.
Yeah, kind of like a shirts off cover model style competition. And it involved a lot of hard work and a lot of training.
A lot of meals.
A lot of meals. And I did a blog for about 12 weeks. 11 weeks, 12 weeks.
Yeah. I remember the blog.
I started out, I was quite strong, but I wasn't in good shape. And I had to get down to looking good in my tighty whities by the end of the 3 months. And we did it in the end, but I think it proved to be quite a popular blog.
I tell you what, when you started taking the kit off, the hits went up.
Well,
the girls in the office have never been the same.
No, mostly.
All that time in hack school was really worth it.
Obviously, it stood you in good stead for the job at the BBC you do now.
Yeah.
So I suppose you should, explain your role now. You're not doing sport anymore, are you really? You dabble with it occasionally.
I am a reporter for the BBC in Belfast. I work across TV and radio. It's probably.
It has to be said, we were talking about work saying you're coming back in, and there's a lot of people have access to the Ulster transmitter. We see Rick in the morning,
the day job is a reporter, cross-platform reporter, and I work probably 60% I would say in radio, and the rest is TV, and I present. There's no set days or anything for the presentation, but I present probably on average one bulletin a week, something like that, which was terrifying at the start, but something I've become a lot more used to now. I've been there like over 3.5 years, so it's been great. And I work in news, and it's a far cry really from what I used to do back at Alloa newspapers, and it takes me back to those days of Onken against Michael United, and obviously Northern Ireland's a very different world to the Isle of Man. And I mean, some of the big stories that I've covered or worked on the coverage of since I started the past 3.5 years, Brexit's probably been the biggest story. So I've done a documentary for that for BBC Radio. There have been fatal attacks on members of security services. I've had my home evacuated because of security alerts, car bombs planted outside. There's been Republican loyalist paramilitary activity. There's been Westminster elections. There have been assembly elections. There have been death of high profile figures. And I think probably the most rewarding thing I get to do is work on my own stories now. And it's perhaps strange as somebody who started off life as a sports reporter for his local newspaper. I've done my own series on things like I've gone and spent a couple of days in a youth prison to talk to young prisoners. Female prisoners about rehabilitation. I've done stories about Belfast Islamic community and Sunni Shia relations and their reaction to groups like ISIS and so-called Islamic State, and everything from indigenous languages. But you touched on it before, I do get to work, probably helped by my background here really, I do get to work in sport as well occasionally, which is fantastic, and I've been able to be involved in some really, really cool things. I worked at the 2015 Open Championship at St Andrews, which was just, you know, for a guy who grew up playing golf, was absolutely amazing. I've worked on the coverage of Northern Ireland's international football matches, Republic of Ireland football matches, Sports Personnel of the Year, which was in Belfast, the Giro d'Italia, which was in Northern Ireland the year before last, Ulster Rugby, and then of course we had both Northern Ireland and Republic qualify for the Euros last year as well. So it's been, you know, it's sort of, I guess, like, sort of list all that stuff. It's just been such a busy 3.5 years, and it's flown, but I mean, it really has flown by. It feels like I've been there just a few months and come up to 4 years now. And with everything I've mentioned, it's just, it's thick and fast, but it's been such an incredible ride.
So do you watch much, was it Danske Bank?
Yeah, the Premiership. Yeah, I think quite a few people have asked me, actually, my friends in Northern Ireland, they'd be all really into their football, and they'd often ask me about the standard of Manx football, what's the national team like, you know, what would our top club teams be like, and so on. You know, the top teams in the Irish Premiership, Cliftonville, Crusaders, Glentoran, Linfield, you know, they're proper teams. They're not professional sides, but they are proper teams. I would love to see, I'd be really interested to see, actually, like a team like St George's become involved in like a round robin sort of pre-season friendly match for some of those sides. I think Geordies would have some really tough games, but I think they would show a really good account themselves. I perhaps better give us a gauge as to where we're up to. But the teams are good. I would say, it's not science, obviously, but I would say they're perhaps just a marginal step up from the likes of St George's.
Right.
But certainly the teams towards the bottom of the Irish Premiership, I wouldn't say are light years ahead of what we have here.
Well, it was, I think it was last summer, was it? Ellen Bannon was hoping to play Clifton. Unfortunately, Cliftonville's, I think they got drawn away in Cyprus and kiboshed the tie.
Yeah.
So it would have been interesting, as you say. But the Alamannan FA team has played Cliftonville way back in when? There was a tweet around that time that said that they played.
Don't forget the quadrangular tournament.
The quadrangular tournament. It's coming up later this year. Obviously, Northern Ireland's amateur team will be in that.
I think the big difference between, you know, you've got to, I suppose, remember that if St George's most weeks aren't playing a good standard of opposition, whereas the top, you know, 6-7 teams in the Irish Premiership are playing an opposition who are on a par with them all the time.
Yeah.
And with that comes development and so on. And I think that's perhaps would be the difference. I think technically, actually, there's probably not much in it. Fitness levels, I don't think, would be much in it, because the guys who play for the top teams in Northern Ireland, they all have full-time jobs too. I just think it's that constant level of competition which would perhaps give them the edge.
You've always been quite vocal about Alman joining UEFA. I remember, I think you did one of your famous features at the time.
Yeah.
I think when Mike Nudd was the first ever chief exec, we went front over, and you were quite keen to see his thoughts on that process.
Now
it's very big. We had all the clubs and ourselves been written to by Campaign 55, who they're putting across the point that the Alamann should be in UEFA. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, I'm just flicking through. There's this stat pack that is, you know, some of the figures quoted here about funding and stuff like that's amazing. But you've been banging on this drum for a while now, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously when we were sort of doing articles about this 10 years ago, the argument was perhaps a bit different.
Yeah.
There wasn't much to look to outside of, you know, oh, well, we have teams like the Faroe Islands who we played before, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s in the Island Games and so on. And there were smaller countries playing, but I think the big change and what's changed the argument a lot the past couple of years has probably been Gibraltar.
Yeah.
And I think that you've seen a non-sovereign state. And let's not forget that England, Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland are not sovereign states, and they've always played international football. But we look at something like Gibraltar population, and I would need to check this, but it's at about 30,000, I think, in Gibraltar. Very limited facilities. I know you're playing in European Championship qualifiers, playing, scoring against Scotland at Hampden and doing these things. And then the knock-on effect that has had to Gibraltar football. I mean, one of the stories I covered at the start of this season was a reaction to when Celtic lost to the Lincoln Red Imps of Gibraltar. Now, I don't know much about Lincoln Red Imps. Mm-hmm. They are a completely amateur football side in Gibraltar. I cannot believe that they would be superior to the teams that we have over here, especially a side again like St. George's. And they have beaten Celtic in a Champions League qualifier because their jurisdiction plays international football.
Yeah.
And the doors that that's opened and the opportunities that has opened undoubtedly for Gibraltar players to be exposed to professional clubs, even semi-professional clubs. And imagine being a young footballer now in Gibraltar. Imagine being a 10-year-old now in Gibraltar who's mad about football compared to in the past when what did you really have to aim for?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, they can get an away day at San Siro or the Bernabeu or Wembley. They have these days to look forward to now. And what incentive that is for young footballers in Gibraltar now to want to be the best players they can possibly be. Yeah. Because everyone's just going to up their game to try and play for Gibraltar. And it's obviously impossible as a proud Manxman and somebody who loves his sport and so on to not think that that could be the same here. I think one of the big problems lately, if you were to ask me, has Manx football progressed and developed over the past 10 years? With regret, I'd have to say no, actually.
Yeah.
Just because I've seen no evidence that it has. Yeah. I think one of the reasons for that is because there just isn't much to aim for. I mean, the competitions we play in, we've won them all, or we're there or thereabouts.
Yeah.
What's a long-term plan for the national side? Are we just going to play in the Interleague Cup for the next 20 or 30
Island
years?
Island games, quadrangular as well, and of course.
Of course, the Island game is a quadrangular, yes, but I think in comparison to some of the games I've just mentioned, and some of the games that the likes of St. George's and Peel and Old Boys and St. Mary's could be playing in the years ahead, it's very difficult to draw a fair comparison. So I'd be very interested to see where it goes. I can't stand up any of the figures. I mean, like anyone else, I've been following this on social media and stuff. I know there's been a lot of inroads made and I've seen some of the figures banded about. It's ultimately for the Armagh Football Association, the guys behind Elian Vannin, to kind of drive this forward and see where it goes.
We've been talking about it lots at work. I think Jersey is going to be the testing ground. Now, this document, as I said, was distributed to all the clubs, we were lucky enough to get a copy as well. And it says that Jersey, hopefully, they've got the UEFA been over this week, this year, and it might go to the Court of Arbitration again.
Yeah, which is the way Gibraltar entered, I think. Yeah.
But the document again says that we should be making the application now rather than seeing what happens with Jersey, because that loophole should be going again.
Yeah.
Now, the points that, we flip it the other way, it's going to cost a lot of money to put a bid together, isn't it? I think one of the figures quoted here is £500,000 Jersey have spent on that.
Yeah.
You know.
Of course it costs a lot of money, and we live in a time where money wasn't available as what it was perhaps 10 years ago. I think the point with Jersey is very interesting because
We beat them in the Island Games.
We beat them in the Island Games. We've had some tremendous matches against them, not least, that incredible match we saw at the Bowl a few years ago, which was just the best atmosphere I think I've seen at a national game. If Jersey's application goes ahead, I think it's going to be a very difficult pill to swallow for a lot of Manx footballers and Manx football fans to watch Gibraltar and Jersey play in World Cup qualifiers and European qualifiers, knowing that, with the greatest respect, we've got Runcorn away next week.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to be the very, very difficult thing to face. And you know, I want to see is, I think it'd be encouraging to see the Ireland Football Association, the people behind Elian Vannin as well, to really work together and not do this because they've been backed into a corner, but do it because we want to, and there's a blueprint there, and there's a plan for the next 10, 15, 20 years of Manx football.
Well, if it did hypothetically go ahead, and what sort of money are we talking about per year? What is it? What are the
let me have a quick look at these figures.
I mean, so some of the figures I've seen do seem impressive money-wise. Now, I'm sure it's not all as simple as that, and there's lots of consideration needed. But.
Well, UEFA, there are various grants and stuff. So each association, this is according to the document we've been given, is entitled to €3 million euros payment for infrastructure, though obviously the bowl would need to be redeveloped and it would probably cost.
Yeah, what is the minimum standard?
I think it's about 6,000 seater, isn't
it? Right, right.
But I'm not 100% sure about that. And then you look at these are the figures from the UEFA financial statements from 2011-2014. Andorra took €11.2 million euros. Faroe Isles €12.9 million euros. Liechtenstein €5.8 million euros. San Marino €8.2 million.
Mm-hmm.
They are big figures, and you can see, why UEFA's campaign, campaign 55, are quite rightly loading these out.
I went to uni. I did my undergrad in Derby, and then I did my postgrad at the University of Ulster on the north coast of Ireland, and all my friends over there, and this can be perhaps like a throwaway argument, but I guess it's more of a point of principle. All my friends always say, do the Isle of Man don't play international football, do they? And I go, oh no, we don't. They go, why not? You know? Mm. And when you consider, there are no professional teams in the Irish Premiership or the Welsh Leagues, or the Republics or the League of Ireland. I don't know.
They might be semi-pro at least. If we look at TNS, who are champions of Wales for however many seasons in a row, the players they've got on their books, most of them have played professional at some level or another.
Mm-hmm.
I think money is exchanging. I was going to pick up on this point a bit. Gibraltar, I did some research. There's some tremendous Twitter followers in Gibraltar who are doing great work, Gibraltar Football Talk and a couple of other people like that, and I got in contact with them, and there's some stats about what has happened to Gibraltar football since they went into UEFA. And strangely, the numbers of Gibraltans playing football in that league have gone down because there's money now. So if you're a budding professional in Spain, you're going to get paid maybe a little bit more than you would in the Spanish lower league to go and play Gibraltar. I'm not saying that hasn't raised the standards, I wouldn't be saying that it's completely amateur. There is money and it's floating around, and that the figures we're getting quoted here, that's where that money's going in some instances.
You mentioned infrastructure before, and like if we had that money, would you refurbish the bowl? What other things would you like to see done over here? Like,
well, to be honest, I think, if you look at the 3Gs, we are actually covered. Obviously, maybe an indoor 3G pitch would be the obvious starting point.
And you'd need a full-time coaching staff and management, and that wouldn't come cheap. If you want a decent manager who's been in the game for a long time, it's X amount over a 3 or 5 year contract. You'd need a full-time goalkeeping coach. You'd probably need at least 3 full-time coaches. Would you need a full-time physio, a full-time kit man?
It's all the entry down as well.
You'd have to effectively develop an organization probably with at least 10 full-time members of staff, I'm guessing.
Mm.
And everyone would have to be committed over a 5 year, and it takes, a lot of investment.
So I suppose we should, we've discussed all the serious stuff. We should maybe go a little bit lighthearted now.
Where's this going?
Is it true you've done a voiceover for Points of View?
It is, right. This is quite interesting. BBC Northern Ireland make Points of View. And for those of you who don't know, I guess for people our age, people comfortably in their 30s.
Flipping love.
Jeremy Vine. Yeah. Was Anne Robinson before that?
Yeah, and Terry Wogan.
And Terry Wogan, obviously, before that. And basically, disgruntled BBC viewers who like to complain about the organisation's output, they will write into a programme, contact a programme, Points of View, and these complaints are aired.
Yeah.
Thanks to the voice of... voices of various people who just happened to be available at the time, and because it's made in Belfast, non-Northern Ireland accents are a bit scarce. It perhaps sounds strange if the 20 complaints are all spoke with like a Belfast accent. So as one of the people who gets roped in. We're currently in our off season. Just limbering up, ready for the big kickoff again as we
So what was the, as you know, pardon the pun, what was the kickoff you were voicing? Was
it Songs of Praise, and Antiques Roadshow always gets a big kickoff. I remember one disgruntled viewer was furious at the most expensive thing that Antiques Roadshow had ever valued.
Yeah.
The BBC had billed it and billed it, and sort of anticipation was rife going into Sunday night, and it turned out that it was, I can't remember what the object was, I think it was a painting or something, but it had been brought in by a museum, and it wasn't something that somebody had found in their garage, and it was kind of...
I can see why you'd write it right in.
And, I mean, I'm just repeating what the viewers said, but they were very disappointed.
Very disappointed.
And they saw it as a cop-out, actually, and it perhaps teased something that wasn't quite as it seems during the week, so that's the kind of stuff we do.
So can we expect to hear you in the new series?
You absolutely can. I usually do a couple of voices, and I also do some voiceover work occasionally for the likes of Panorama.
Oh, right. Okay.
Which is made.
Do you do, you know, when they do the silhouette so you can't see the person? Are you the actor's voice?
I've been the actor's voice. And indeed the silhouette a couple of times.
Wow.
On so like local news output and Panorama.
You've got actually quite a unique silhouette. So you know, you're big lab.
Sort of
so
broad shoulders, narrow waist.
Yes. Yeah. So you know, maybe not if you're portraying a housewife from.
Well, that's it. Yeah.
Quarter down.
Yeah, that's it. We try and keep it specific. But I mean, I get sort of drafted in all the time to do bits and pieces. Really, a lot of stuff is made by BBC Northern Ireland. So. Opportunities are always there.
Right, our favourite time of week, Dave. And sadly, you know, we just have been talking about points of view, but our virtual mailbag is pretty empty this week, isn't it?
We thought it'd be bulging. With
we did.
Arrival.
We like open round table discussions.
You know what the issue was? You didn't retweet.
That's what it was, mate. I know.
You've got 20, 30 followers now on Twitter?
I've got up to 35, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. You're punching there.
You just didn't want to open yourself up to some abuse, did you?
We have had one, though, from our usual contributor.
Yes. Not Joey Andrews.
I'll let Dave do the voice for this
No, absolutely not. But it's from our one of our unique referees over here, Johnny Hogg. He wants to know, would you ever take up refereeing again?
No, I wouldn't. I don't know what the situation is now with local refereeing, but when I did those handful of matches, again, it was about eight or nine years ago. I think it was about £20 to cover a match, which was probably, I mean, once you take your petrol money out of that, it's a tenner.
What car were you driving for? It cost you a tenner to get.
I
lived in Onken and the game was at Nobles Park.
I was driving a very sleek, a Citroen ZX Vogue Edition.
Oh, okay.
1.4 injection.
I was going to say, it must be more than 1.4.
1.4 injection, absolute prime wheels down Boy Bay back in the day. it wasn't much money. And I know that's why people don't do it, but I found... Like, you don't have any referee's assistance, and it was, like, you're trying to call offside from 40 yards behind play, where players are running off each other's shoulders and that kind of stuff, and it's just it's just such a thankless task. I mean, you can only hope you get half your decisions right, really. And I found that... the players were actually fine on all the matches. It was good. But it's... I don't know. I don't think it's the way I'd want to spend, you know, door-to-door. It's 2.5 hours, 3 hours. And I really enjoyed the process of, like, learning about the rules of the game properly and doing... I think we did a two-day course at the bowl, and Tommy Crowe did it, and he was fantastic. And there was really good turnout. And interestingly, some of the guys who were there learning to become referees were some of the more notorious kind of players who were coming towards the end of their playing days and really wanted to get involved in refereeing, which I thought was interesting. And, you know, the referees kind of fraternity here is a close one. It's nice. We had this thing where Howard Webb came over.
Yeah, I remember you.
who was like the nicest guy you could ever interview, and he went on to referee like the World Cup final like the following year, I think it was.
You've both done well since, as we said.
Yeah, I mean, our careers kind of took similar paths, like, I think. But it, so all that part of it was fantastic, but not for me.
Not for you.
Well, not for me, really.
Johnny hasn't asked his usual question as well, probably because he wasn't refereeing here at the time you were reporting.
Yeah.
But did you have a favourite referee? Anyone you were most impressed with?
Is it Mark Thomas?
Mark Thomas,
oh,
yeah.
Good shout.
Yeah. I think Mark was, and this is just going on the couple of seasons that I covered Manx football, I think he was just generally renowned as being the most consistent referee, and he would always take charge of the big games. He took charge as well as some interleague matches, and always, I think, did himself proud, because those matches are played to such a higher level, and so much more rides on the decisions, and I think he always did really well. But they're all good guys. Tommy Crowe was a good ref, and Tony McMeekin, and I mean, you could name all of them.
Tony Tash,
really good legend. Guys, yeah.
A legend of the Manx game. Go on, Dave, your favourite question of the week.
Right, well, you might give an obscure answer that no one over here will know of.
No, we have to keep it island-based.
Oh, okay, good. What's your favourite Isle of Man Chinese?
Well, here's the thing, I don't go for Chinese's. I know I've heard the podcast, I know that this question is coming, and the last Chinese I went for over here was Chinatown.
Right, popular choice
by the Termi. But I'd go for an Indian, really. Mm. So I went for an Indian last week, and it was Gandhi, what used to be the Water Margin.
Oh,
the back
right,
of
yeah, yeah, yeah. In the hood,
Hengjian, yeah. Those mean streets of Lakeside Gardens. Yeah. It was lovely feed. Bring your own as well.
And bring your own.
Very reasonable night.
Talking of the Hitman Han, he did send us an email this week, didn't he? Did you see it? Did you see that one? Oh, he does send us lots of emails, so I can see why you're looking at me blankly. He sent me an email with a picture of a Chinese takeaway. Did you see this?
No, I didn't get this.
So he was out last Friday.
Dear.
I can't remember who he said he'd been. I think he might have watched the horse racing or something like that. This is bad research. But he'd been out, got home. The only place open at 1:15. He got the last bus home. Was the Chinese takeaway in Port Erin.
Right.
He went in.
Yeah.
Curried fried curried duck, I think he had. So good. He had it for his tea the next day as well.
We've
changed him. The man that said he didn't like takeaway.
That's it now.
Once you go curry duck.
That's it. You never go back.
Can't go back.
Right, before we have a look at Saturday's fixtures with Rick, we're looking forward to his expert opinion on this. I caught up with Isle of Man FA fixture god Tony Meffin after he picked up the Administrator of the Year award at Wednesday's Isle of Man Sports Awards. So let's have a listen to what Tony had to say now. Tony Weppham, Administrator of the Year. That sounds great, doesn't it?
it's nice, but I think you know me better than most people that, we do it for the love of the sport. Football is a great sport. There's a lot of participants. There's a lot of work that's done behind the scenes by a lot of people. And I have the unenvied task of trying to keep the fixtures going. And I've done it for a long time now, and doesn't get any easier because the weather's not getting any better. But no, I'm truly honoured, and really like to thank my wife, because she's the one that allows me sit in the house, in the kitchen, on the table there, and do all the hard work and doesn't moan. So I appreciate that she's supported me through it.
Well, last year, it has to be said, to pardon the pun, it was the perfect storm, wasn't it? At one point we were 200 games behind schedule because of the flooding and the water logging that ensued, and then the problems with the Astro at the bowl. It was literally one thing after another, wasn't it? So did you at any point think this isn't going to finish this season?
No, I had full confidence that we'd get through it if the clubs would help me. And I've got to say that the clubs were absolutely superb. Sometimes they had 2-3 games in a week, which isn't nice.
No.
But tired legs. But we managed to get through it. But I just hope we don't have to go through that again, because so many sports suffered, not only with the water damage, but with just everything that it came from that flood. And football was hit hard because the bowl that came out of action, so we couldn't get any Astro games on. And some clubs had a real bad time of it, but we've got a similar scenario this year where you follow football closely. Bradman have only played 15 league games, and some clubs have played 24. Well, you put 9 games, that's 9 weeks. They're over 2 months behind with their fixtures, and it's going to be a real hard struggle. But no, last year was the worst I've known. and I'm just glad that we got through it and got the season finished. And in the records, everyone who won the trophies is there named on it, with 2015-16 on it.
And every time, well, not every time, occasionally you say to me, that's it, this year's my last doing it. You know, awards like this must make it worthwhile, though.
Well, it does, and you know, it's really nice that you know, Sports Council and the committee look at your sport for a start, and say, well, you know, what sterling work has been put in. And when I looked at the sort of other nominees that were there, I didn't think I stood a chance, and I just, you know, glad to just have my name sort of mentioned and my sport mentioned. But it takes a lot of work, and as I touched on when I was speaking to Tim, I think it's so important that administrators come through, because if you've got a little bit of spare time, give it to the sport that you love, because any little bit of help that you can give means that someone else who maybe is having to do everything can sort of cut back a little bit, and you'll keep them in the sport longer. But I think at the end of every year you think, well, this is going to be the end. You know, I've done my bit, but you know, I keep being asked to do it, so I must be doing okay. And I like working with people like yourself and Dave and Tim and John Watty, who really are the front of our sport, because we just give you the information and it's you guys that then suddenly sell it to 70, 80,000 people.
Well, congratulations again, Tony. A well-deserving winner in my eyes. So go and enjoy the rest of the evening.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much, Andy.
Right, welcome back. Today, it's the 24th podcast of the season. Seems like we've done a lot more than that, doesn't it, Dave?
It's gone on a long time now, hasn't it?
But yeah. We're delighted to say we're joined by former Sports Desk mainstay and now BBC Northern Ireland roving reporter Rick Farringer. He's in the studio with us today, and we're going to look ahead at this week's fixtures, including, there's a bit of a cup melee as always, isn't there, Dave?
There is, a feast of cup semi-finals and quarter-finals.
If you like knockout, notice the N in that word. You will love this weekend, because there is five knockout games on, starting at the French Provident International FA Cup semi-finals. Super Saturday. I called it in the paper, because it's staggered kickoffs, 1:15.
Oh,
Dave's off to Colby again.
What's the drama? Drama unfold on Twitter as the day wears on. Very good. I like this.
It'll be trending. 1:15 kickoff.
At Colby. Yeah, Station Field's my second home these days. I've been down there so many times this season.
And you traipsed mud into the Dickie Gale's clubhouse last week. I don't know if you'll be allowed back in.
I don't think so, but he does a good cup of tea down there and a good sausage wrap. So yeah.
Big up to the Dickie. He said 1:15, Peel Foxdale.
Bit of an historic match,
though. Yes, the last time. When do you think the last time these two played, Rick? In a first team.
This Western tussle.
Competitive first team fixture.
10 years?
You'd be wrong. 1997.
Wow.
March 1st. First round of the Woods Cup, which is when Peel was still in Division 2. Peel won 3-1.
Can you guess any scorers?
Yeah, go over the goal scorers.
Peel in 1997?
Yep.
A very, very young Danny Lace?
No. He wasn't playing that day.
Controversially. I don't know.
Two goals for the one, the only, Rick Holden.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And of course, Tommy Klukas bagged the third. Yeah. And Steve Kane, for those of you Foxdale fans out there, he bagged the Foxdale's goal in a game that was described as playing in the gale. 20 years of hurt. Thanks to Colin Moore for providing me with those stats and the excellent database on the Peel official website. It's hard to believe that these two haven't met since. Now, another fact to this, the boys were a little bit upset that it wasn't Foxdale home, because Danny Lace has never played at Billy Goat Park, and it's the only ground in Manx football he's never played.
Wow, that's impressive. He's 601
first. 601 first team games, 714.
Has anyone played more first team games, current players?
For Peel? No, not
he is.
Peel.
Anyone in Manx football played more?
Yes, your man played 1,000 games. And
still playing.
Looking for Russian, and I completely forgotten his name.
Oh!
There's going to be tweets about this.
He only played 1,000 first team games.
Yeah. It was before my time, but there you go. So yeah, Peel Foxdale. I think this will be a good game for you, Dave.
I think so. It's got the added spice of a couple of ex-Peel players playing for Foxdale.
A couple of current Peel players playing for Foxdale, because Stewie Fraill and Anthony Corkle are obviously in their Masters team.
Absolutely, yes. Some technicality there.
But the old dual register coming in handy. Yeah.
But Aaron Costain's leading the line for Foxdale this season, former Peel player.
He'll be wanting to... he's got to put... You know, he has put a point to prove, really, hasn't he? He wants to show that they shouldn't have maybe let him go in the summer.
Absolutely. So I think this should be an interesting game. I think you mentioned in your preview that it might be quite feisty as well, a few tackles flying in.
You can expect it. Plenty of kicking in this one.
Blood and thunder. Cup tie. I think, you know, the thinking man's pundit would probably go for a Peel, but you just never can tell, can you?
Well, form often goes out the window in cup football, or so the cliche goes, but seven wins in a row for Peel now, isn't it? So you can't really look past that.
And they easily dispatched Brad and 8-1 last week at a game I was unfortunate enough to be sat watching. For
they never really even hit top gear in that match, did
they? No, it was 3-0 inside 20 minutes. And you obviously, Foxdale, Brad, and you'd say were comparable, maybe even Brad, maybe slightly better than Foxdale. So this one, but I think this one will be closer.
I think so. A lot of pride at stake with this one, but I think Peel will probably win this one.
It'll be a rare day out in Colby. So the other semi final taking slightly later, 3:30, Super Saturday, as I said. St George's Douglas Athletic. Geordie's on for the Grand Slam again, Rick. You know, they're just. Omnipresent force of Maxwell. Well, it's easy for me to
say. It's incredible just to maintain that level of desire, isn't it? Really, year after year. What a decade it's been, and that's it's all down to Chris Bass Senior and the mentality and attitude he installs in those players is incredible.
We have to give a big shout out to Douglas Athletic for that result last week.
Cracking result, they beat St Mary's 4-3. Wow. Conor Dowell, what a story. You know, this would be making headlines in BBC Northern Ireland, I think. Conor Dowell came back from travelling to South America the night before, comes on late substitute, scores a 94th minute winner.
Oh, you couldn't write it.
And there was a cameo for Mark Wolford as well.
He was a great player in the yard at St Ninian's back in the day. He was great.
The flyaways.
And he was, I know he's done the rounds, Wolfie. I mean, name the club he hasn't played for. But I remember seeing him a few years ago now. I think he was playing for Ronaldsway at the time.
The Rockets.
I remember I kind of said to him, at the time, I think he was like 25, 26, and I said, you know, it's not too late to really knuckle down and have a couple of great years. And he ended up working his way back into the Alamann team.
Yeah. Spells at Waxy St Mary's, and obviously Douglas Athletic was his last club. He hasn't played. That was his first game of the season.
He's been struggling with him. Well, he obviously retired with injury, so whatever, his recuperation from that's obviously going well.
We gave the Douglas Athletic Club call a ring, didn't we? And they're saying that it could be a one-off, though.
Could be a one-off, but you never know.
Even with these two back, and of course Martin Cowan in form for Douglas Athletic, I think it's going to be a tough afternoon for them. Geordie's obviously got the bit between their teeth. They even afforded a Russian a 2-goal lead in the previous round and still won 6-2, wasn't it, David?
I was at that game, a last minute equaliser for Geordie's, and they just destroyed them in extra time. So can't look past the home win.
No. Of course, it's also a Woods Cup quarterfinals. You were a big fan of the Woods Cup, weren't you, Rick?
Oh, massively. I regularly, you know, I follow it massively. Since half an hour ago, just quickly.
GH Club Woods Cup quarterfinals. There's three games on the card for that. Starting with the game I was going to go to last week, but obviously it was unfortunately postponed. Onkenpull Rose, your home
absolutely,
home
yes.
Village Club.
I'm going to say, it's at Niverson, is it?
It's at the mighty Niverson.
I have to say, since you stopped reporting, attendances have gone up at the Niverson.
Yeah, well, that was always going to be the case, I think. And at Niverson, do you know what? Onken, on their day, difficult side to break down there. Onken win,
you heard it here first, Dave.
Yeah. Both sides in good form. I mentioned it in the preview. I think Onken do have the better form, but Pulley, again, they've had, I think, 3 wins and 2 draws out of the last 6 games, so they're in good form as well, so...
This one, I think, has got extra time written all over it. They might have to fire up the lights on the stock cars just to make sure we get the game concluded before darkness.
We have another 4-all draw and penalties.
Before we go any further, I have to initiate an apology. I offended a club last week. It wasn't intentional, but it's happened. So much so that they took to Twitter several times, changed their name on Twitter, their handle, just to the club with no name. I'm of course talking about Douglas District, who heinously I missed out of the preview of the Manx Independent last week. I did talk about them, just not
Yeah, well, the name, double and season. I got a stat wrong for them, so, you know, we're both to blame for
Well, this is it, yeah, we thought they played Foxhall twice already this season, when in fact they only played them once up to that
Standards
point.
Have slipped.
Standards have slipped.
Our newspapers.
I was too busy gluing Dave's chair to the floor. It's just all gone to hell. Now, they are in the quarterfinals. They're having a good season on the slide.
Fantastic.
And they're away at Braddon in the quarterfinals of the World Cup this weekend.
Don't forget their Masters side has got into the final as
Big
well.
Up to them as well. They're at the first ever senior final in a couple of weeks' time. Hopefully you get the boys in next week, aren't we, Dave?
Yes, hopefully. And obviously we'll have the Hitman Hatton down report on that final.
So. Yeah, he'll be tweeting, video recording, all manner of media. He is a media mogul in many ways. But Braddon this week should be favourites for this. I know they had a bad time out against Peel last time, but that, you know, it's a different class, really. And they'll be hoping to bounce back with a good result of this.
Yeah, well, they're still harbouring hopes of a League and Cup treble. They've got to play catch-up, and psychologically, Roy will probably have the edge. I spoke to Aaron Quinn last night at the Sports Awards, and he's very happy with how it's gone for them, but he pays a lot of respect to Braddon.
Well, obviously, Royal's treble bid was ended last week by Castan in the other Woods Cup quarter-final that went ahead last week. 4-1, it was you know, fairly convincing.
Shocking result,
and
yeah.
He was very complimentary about them on Twitter, wasn't he?
He was, and I think, going back to Braddon, you can't look past a win for them in this game, but they're going to have to be wary of complacency. I mean, D&D pushed Foxdale all the way last week. I think it was 2-1 in the end, wasn't it? So, a few of their players got to Team of the Week.
Yeah, Dan Armstrong, the goalkeeper, saved a penalty. He was Team of the Week, the special Team of the Week this week. So he will, he looked in good form. He gave a man of the match on us, so he obviously made a few good stops. This won't be straightforward for Braddon. At least they're probably what they're worrying about most is their home pitch, because they haven't played many games at Victoria Road this year, have they?
No, only a couple since the turn of the year. So, they're running out of time fast to get those fixtures done. But, they're still well placed. They should get promotion.
The final Woods Cup quarter final take place this week takes Jim's take on Rykop. Two very inconsistent teams, Rick. We're looking for a new cliche for inconsistency. We say Jekyll and Hyde pretty much every week. In your career as a burgeoning career as a journalist, is there anything you could use?
Well, the fan favourites, aren't they? I mean, you always say, like in golf, Phil Mickelson, they're a mixed bag, you never know what you're going to get. People sign up to it, so. Yeah, Jekyll and Hyde's been used, obviously.
Yeah, mixed bag's nice. Right?
You know, any team that's going to have a roller coaster ride of a season, you want to get on board the roller coaster ride. So.
This could go into extra time as well, Dave, though, couldn't it?
I think so. The league fixture took place only a couple of weeks ago, didn't it? And James won 3-1
right.
Up at Youthy. So, you know, they'll be confident of getting a similar result here, especially with home advantage. It does remain to be seen what sort of state the pitch is in down at Tramode, though, after the weather we've had this week.
And what sort of side Newton can get out. Sometimes they've got a decent side, and sometimes it's maybe not so much. Yeah. Right, before we look through Saturday's league games, here's a word from our sponsor.
I'm going to keep this short. It's 2017, make a smart decision. After picking up over 100,000 members, Cornerstone are now so confident that once men try their razor and shaving products, they won't go back to their old razor. So you can now get an award-winning razor from just £4 with £10 off. Just visit cornerstone.co.uk/Manx to get started.
Alright, welcome back again. Just the final few league games to run through. Rick, you still here, aren't you?
I'm still here. He's dialed in.
He's going to give you his expert commentary on the Premier League fixtures in a minute. We've got three games in the Candle Life Premier League games this weekend, starting with what's going to be a decisive game in the race for second place, really.
Absolutely.
Corinthians take on St Mary's at Bella Fletcher.
Mm-hmm. Well, Corinthians, they're already assured of the top three finish, which is their best, I believe, in the history of the club, is that
top
right?
Top flight finish, yeah. I think that was what Mepster said last night, so...
So fantastic achievement for all involved with the club. Again, speaking to Meps last night, he says that anything other than second now is a failure. Yeah. That's what they're aiming for. They want to, you know, take a positive step towards next season already. So this is going to be an intriguing game. And I think you were at the cup meet between these sides.
Corinthians, that was in the Railway Cup semi-final. Corinthians sort of really didn't get going until the 60th minute, and by that point St Mary's were a couple of goals ahead. They can't afford to do that again this week. St Mary's, again, they'll be licking wounds after they lost to Athletic in the FA Cup last week. They've already said that they were pinpointing a cup run. That only leaves them with the Aussie Cup, and they'll want to finish second. Nick Hurt's a man that always strives for the best. So this one's going to be a good game.
It could go either way, this one. I wouldn't be surprised if it ended in a draw, to be honest.
What do you think?
I was going to say a draw.
You're going for a draw score? Or
2-2.
2-2. Heard it here first 2-2 again. Fill that one in on your Manx coupon. Right, big game at the bottom, Dave.
Yes.
The mathematic miracle that Mills need, it's easy for me to say that as well, could be made redundant.
Yes.
By these two teams, Ramsey and Colby.
Yes, obviously Colby beat Union Mills last week 4-1 to guarantee Premier League football for them. Fantastic achievement for both them and Athletic. Both promoted this year. Both stayed up.
Very rare that happens.
Colby will be confident. They played well. The likes of Jordan Primrose-Smith, Andy Blake, cracking game.
A couple of belting goals, wasn't
fantastic
it?
Fantastic goals in Team of the Week this week. They'll be confident. But Ramsey, likewise, they're now the one team that Mills can catch.
Yeah.
Well, as you say, it takes a bit of a miracle.
So I think they only need a point, really, out of this game, don't they?
Yeah, to get it.
And they've got to play each other in a quirk of the fixtures. They've got to play each other again, haven't they, in a couple of weeks?
I think so, yeah.
So, Mills could be effectively put out of their misery without even playing this week.
Absolutely. Ramsey had some good results lately. We've said it the last couple of weeks, but results against Old Boys and Laxey. So, especially at home, Ballacloan, they'll fancy their chances.
Mm-hmm. Ballacloan, one of your favourite grounds when you were jobbing a couple
of months? Ballacloan was always a nice ground, and Ramsey were one of those sides that they were sort of loose cannons, really, where they could go on one of those runs where they'd lose four in a row. But then if you guys have touched on there, against the top clubs, they could pull a win or at least a draw out of the bag all the time. Like they were, on any given day, they're a good side, Ramsey. They always were. It sounds like that's still the case. At home against Colby this time, Ramsey win for me.
Oh, a lot of young players at Ramsey this season. They seem to be sort of finally getting to grips with the Premier League. And it seems to take that half a season to get up to speed. Final game in the Premier League this weekend. See St John's take on Laxey in the deadest of rubbers.
Yeah, proverbial dead rubber.
This is just a game for pride, really, isn't it?
Bit of fitness, you know, a warm up for the Aussie Cup, maybe.
Yes, good point. The Aussie Cup, obviously, still to come. Both teams will be involved with that, and it's just a case of keeping everyone ticking over, really.
Yeah, St John's went up against Corinthians last week. It was 3-1, I think, to the Whites. So.
Yeah. Corinthians were missing quite a few first team players as well, so it was a cracking result for them.
It was. Laxey, again, we've touched on it every week, but they're missing quite a few players at the moment. So, yeah, it all depends on what team they're going to put out.
Yeah. Finally, Division 2, the champagne can finally be popped this weekend, isn't it right, Dave? Moran versus Douglas Royal. Royal can rubber stamp emphatically their promotion. We've said they've been up, but mathematically this will seal their promotion.
Yeah, it's right? Like a 25 goal swing and then lose every single match, but it's not going to happen, let's face it. They're in a confident mood. I spoke to Quinny last night, and despite that deserved loss last week to Castletown, he's very confident about this, and the players, he got the players back in training a couple of days later, and they just got on with it. The mentality's good, and they just want to get this title, the promotion, put to bed now.
Moran coming into this on a good form. They beat Maloo 7-0 last week. I believe that's their biggest win of the season. So there won't be any pushovers, really.
No, especially not at home. What worries me about Moran, when I saw them play against Onquin, they just looked a bit susceptible to set pieces.
Yeah.
And Royal, they're very gung-ho, and they will probably get a lot of corners and free kicks in this match, so they could punish them. But if Moran get off to a good start, they could cause an upset here.
Rick?
It's a Royals win all day long, isn't it? I would make a prediction as well. Foxdale will take the lead against Peel. Peel will run out comfortable winners, but I fancy Foxdale will be up for it. First 15 minutes, early goal.
Governors Athletic took the lead against
Governors Athletic, it was 9-1 in the end, but they did take the league. It was the goal that nearly broke the internet. Never mind Kim Kardashian's arse. It was that was the goal that nearly brought down 30 years of technology. Right, Rick, thanks for coming in.
It's been a pleasure, gents. Thank you very much.
Hopefully you'll remember to footnote myself and Dave when you feature on Piers Morgan's Life Stories.
Checks in the post, lads.
Checks in the post. Before we go, we should say good luck to Liam Doyle, who starts his USL season with Sweet Park Rangers on Saturday. The Kansas outfit take on OKC Energy FC.
Good luck.
That is a mouthful indeed. Right, good luck, Liam. Good luck, everyone. Hope you have a good week. We'll be back next week with D&D boys next week, is it, Dave?
It certainly is. Dave Matheson and Richard Delaney, hopefully.
Look forward to that. We talk about the Masters Cup final and Having no name.
And
right.
Have they forgiven you yet?
Probably not. Right, remember you can tweet us day or night at Monks440blog, or you can find all the podcasts at audioboom.com/channel/Manx Football, or, of course, on iTunes. Ta-ta.
Ta-ta for now.